Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Negotiations Ninja listeners, welcome, as always, to the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Today, my incredible and amazing guest is Brian Ahern, who has been so gracious with his time. We've gone back and forth a few times, and we screwed up the first interview, so he has definitely been very gracious with his time. We talk all about the major challenges today that salespeople have when influencing others. We also talk about some of the principles of influence, where salespeople struggle the most, and what some of the principles are that work well that insurance agents, which is his major business, that insurance agents do well that can be leveraged across other industries. And I think this is really important because oftentimes we get very insular within our industries. We get very insular within our focus areas, and we don't look to other industries and what similar people to us are doing in other industries that can be leveraged in our business. We talk all about that today with the incredible and amazing Brian Ahern. Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you today?
I'm very well, man. I'm really excited to have you on, and you've been so gracious with your time and so gracious with being on. I'm really excited to get into the conversation. But before we do that, maybe you could tell the listeners a bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. Well, I started my career in the insurance industry completely by chance. I've not yet met a person who said, when I grew up, all I wanted to do was be in the insurance industry. But through it, I learned a tremendous amount. I met my wife. I bumped into Robert Cialdini's material. So it was an awesome experience for me. And it was going on 20 years ago when I came across Robert Cialdini's material on the science of influence. And I was so intrigued by it and started using it in the sales training that we were doing at the insurance company. And I knew, Mark, that when I encountered that information, I thought, this is what I'll do with the rest of my career. And about 10, 12 years ago, I started really planning for what my exit would look like, building the website, getting the domain name, company, all that kind of stuff. And 2.5 years ago, I stepped away from insurance. And now I work with individuals and organizations to teach them about the psychology of persuasion and how to get to yes sooner and more often.
Incredible. And you've been very successful at teaching salespeople how to influence. In that teaching, what have you noticed as some of the major challenges that salespeople have around sort of the concept of influence and influence in general?
Well, it's interesting that when I was working with independent insurance agents and they would come in for workshops, usually the question I was asked most often and earliest was, what's the best way to close? And I would tell them, I think the best way to close is the moment you meet somebody for the first time, you shake their hand and you look them in the eye, because everything builds on that. And when it comes to sales, there's no magic wand. There's no one single thing you're going to do to get sales. It's a series of yeses throughout the sales cycle that ultimately gets you to the point where you're trying to close the sale. But I really think if you do it well, it's not so much a close as it is informing people into yes, getting them to a point where, having used psychology, it just makes sense that they want to do business with you.
I love what you said there, informing them into yes. What do you mean by that?
Well, the principles of influence that we teach are make it cognitively easier for people to understand the merits of what you're offering and ultimately to say yes. And as you begin to tap into those, it becomes a lot more natural in terms of a conversation instead of a sales process where you're having dialogue with individuals and the merits of what you're offering, it resonates more with them. And so understanding perhaps how to ethically bring authority into the equation so they're like, oh, I never understood that before, or effectively using social proof to inform them that other customers who are like them are benefiting from this and here's how. It's all of those things that just make it easier. And that's what the research shows. It makes it easier for people to say yes to you.
With that in mind, as we think about Cialdini's work, maybe for the listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with it, we could go through the principles of influence, and then I want to dive into a couple of them, if you don't mind.
Sure. So Robert Cialdini popularized some psychology that he labeled the principles of influence. Now, these principles that we'll quickly go over, they have been around as long as human beings have existed. But he did put them into a framework where people could say, oh, I get it. That makes sense. And he originally had six principles when he wrote the book, Influence, Science, and Practice. And then a few years ago, he added a seventh principle, and we'll save that one for last. The principles that you read about in more of his earlier work are the principles of liking, which simply says it's easier for people to say yes to you if they know you and like you. Principle of reciprocity, that natural obligation that we all feel to give back to someone who's first given to us. The principle of authority, that it's easier for us to follow the lead of somebody that we see as extremely wise or an expert. Social proof, how we're influenced by what other people are thinking and doing and how they're feeling. The wisdom of the crowds, so to speak. We're heavily influenced by other people, and particularly people that we see as being very similar to ourselves. And then there's the principle of consistency, which says we feel an internal psychological pressure, but also an external social pressure to be consistent in what we say and what we do. And I like to just boil it down to this, word and deed. We just feel better about ourselves when our words and deeds line up, and we look better to other people too when we keep our word. And then the final principle that he initially popularized was scarcity. And scarcity is that feeling that we value things more when we suddenly believe that they're rare or going away. So those are the initial six principles. And the principle that he introduced, I think it was about 4 years ago when he came out with the book Persuasion, is called Unity. And the principle of unity, it's not just liking on steroids. It goes much deeper than that. Unity is about shared identity, that it's easier to say yes to people that we see that are of us or of our family, of our tribe. Or a great example, my father served in the Marines. When he met another Marine, I almost felt like he was closer to that person than me, his own flesh and blood, because they shared some experiences that very few other people can understand. And so there was this deep sense of shared identity with them.
Of these principles, do you think there are any particular principles that people struggle with the most?
People make a lot of mistakes with each of them. For example, it's really easy to understand the principle of liking, that if somebody likes me, they're more likely to say yes to me. A problem people have there is they try so hard to get someone to like them that they come across as desperate or, wow, you must really want something of me. And the way to really employ that principle is to use it to come to like other people so that, you know, Mark, the more I come to know and like you, I will truly want the best for you. And when you start to see that and sense that, you become much more open to what I might share. Do you like me? Sure, but it's more because you sense how much I like you. That's an example with that principle where people make a mistake. With the principle of reciprocity, people make a mistake of giving in such a way that it comes across as, okay, what do you want? I know there are strings attached to this, you know, what do you want? So the giving isn't genuinely to benefit the other person. It's just a sales tactic to get somebody to respond. People have a pretty good sense of when that's happening, and so they tend to resist. So those are a couple of examples that come right to mind for me.
Nice. Now, you work with so many different types of salespeople, but you're particularly very popular in the insurance industry. Are there things that insurance salespeople do very well that could be leveraged across other industries that you've noticed, like, wow, these guys do this particular principle incredibly well. I wish others did this as well.
I would say most of the agents that I worked with, and when I was with the insurance company, we worked through independent insurance agents. And so a lot of those men and women really get to know people in their community. And they are able to get a customer and keep a customer for a long time because they're very good at building relationships. It's not transactional, which it can be if you're dialing a 1-800 number or if you're just going to a website to purchase insurance. But they really understood that if I'm going to be able to pull together an insurance policy that really protects the assets of this individual or this family, I need to really know them on a personal level. You know, you're going to be insuring your homes and their cars and potentially their businesses. And so I think that they were very good at the relationship building aspect of sales.
I love that. I think that's a big aspect for a lot of salespeople that they tend to miss, because relationship building not only works with the liking principle, but it also helps to build social proof and so many other things that then now can be leveraged across all sorts of principles.
Right. When you really get to know somebody, all of a sudden you can use social proof because you know other people who are very similar to them.
Yes.
And that becomes very effective. It informs your giving. So when you're giving, you can be very tailored. So it's not like, here's my company pen, which people don't really view as much of a gift at all. But it's when they can start saying, hey, you know what? I was out and I saw this and I thought of you, and maybe they picked up something. So it informs your giving through reciprocity, and all of these things build relationship and make that person feel that you really know and understand them. And you do.
Yeah. One of the things that I've seen a lot of salespeople struggle with is the application of some of these principles too early on in the conversation. For example, scarcity. They'll start a sales conversation with scarcity instead of starting a sales conversation with maybe the concept of liking or creating social proof or something to that effect. Do you see any mistakes around timing along some of the principles? Or is maybe that's not a mistake and they're just doing it the wrong way? What do you think?
Well, the book that I wrote that came out earlier this year is called Persuasive Selling for Relationship-Driven Insurance Agents. And we look at the sales process and which principles are most effective at different points in the sales process. So for example, when you are prospecting to potential clients, there are a few principles that are really going to stand out. They're going to want to know that you have expertise. They're going to want to know that perhaps other people are benefiting from what you do. And scarcity can be applicable by framing what you do as being very different, that somebody can't get what you have somewhere else.
Got
so
it.
Those three may be the key for somebody to say, yeah, Mark, I got that letter that you sent and I was intrigued. And so that's why I'm calling you. Or maybe they take your phone call. But you've set yourself apart by being different, but showing that your other people are benefiting from what you're doing and you really do have expertise. So all along the sales process, you need to think, what's the goal? Like when I get the first meeting, what's the goal in that first meeting? I think it's building rapport and relationship. And so there, you're going to have a great opportunity to leverage the principle of liking and reciprocity if you can. And the giving doesn't have to be this overt giving, but it can be, you know, Mark, I was doing a little research on your business and I came across an article that I think you might really enjoy. That's costless to me, but it shows that I was thinking of you and I understand you. So little acts of giving like that, in addition to engaging the principle of liking, can start to make you feel like, this is a guy I want to do business with. And that might be all I want in the first meeting before I start moving to other steps in the cycle.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, people want to do business with people that they like, that they have rapport with, right? And so as long as you can establish that in the first couple of conversations, then it makes sense that they would want to find out more.
Right. And it's not that somebody is just going to do business with you because they like you, but it's almost guaranteed that they will not do business if they don't like you.
Right.
So you need to make sure that you're thinking about that relationship aspect of this. And frankly, you know, I've been in the business arena for 35 plus years now. One of the most enjoyable aspects of it are the friendships that I've made. I made a couple of phone calls today to people that I used to do business with when I was with the insurance company, just to say, how are you doing? It's been a while since we've talked. And it was so much fun to catch up. And it really made me think about how much I enjoy those relationships.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started. And you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. One of the things that I've noticed a lot of salespeople adapt to, but some haven't done as well in their sales influence negotiation process, is the utilization of social media as a tool to help with influence. Perhaps you could provide some tips to some of the folks that are listening right now on what to look for and how to use social media to really benefit them.
Okay. I'm a big proponent of using LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is an opportunity to go way beyond the resume because you can post articles you're writing, videos of yourself teaching or presenting. You have an opportunity to really build out in depth what you've done throughout your career, get the testimonials. if you're not utilizing the tool in that fashion, you need to. One of the biggest clients that I have came to me. I never prospected for them, but one of the owners had read Cialdini's book and went out and searched and saw my credentials, and that started the conversation. So it was because of my LinkedIn profile. Some other things that you can do with LinkedIn, whenever somebody reaches out to me, if they haven't put in a reason like, hey, I heard you speak here or I read your book, if they won't put a reason in every single time, Mark, I will send a message back to say, hey, Mark, thanks for reaching out to Connect. How did you find me? And almost every time they'll reply. Now, that puts the social back in social media because most people are like, wow, this is really cool that you're actually engaging with me. And I'll go back and forth with them in a little bit of conversation. I make sure when I reach out to people that I give them a reason of why I'm reaching out. So I might say, hey, Mark, I saw you're a contributor to Agency Nation. I'm a contributor too. I like to connect with others who are contributing content. But right away, people are like, oh, well, you're just like me. And so when they connect with me, even if they don't put a personal reply, I will reply back and say, hey, appreciate you connecting. And those little acts, they do make a big difference. And I'll give people one last tip. When you are trying to get into an organization, it's always good if people in that organization see that you're connected to others in the organization. So as an example, I have a friend, somebody that worked with me at the insurance company. He started working at a different insurance company, and I realized, wow, I don't have any connections with that company. So what I did was I went out and I queried people who were in like VP sales positions and came up with dozens, and I put a short message, and it would have just said like, Mark, and I always use first name. I'd say, Mark, a good friend and former coworker recently started working at your organization. I saw that we have a number of connections in common, so I thought I'd reach out. So very personal on the message, and almost every time they connect. So now I've got dozens of people. I've established a little bit of a beachhead with that company. And when the right time comes to start pursuing it more, those people will start looking around and go, wow, I mean, Brian's connected to a good number of people who work here.
Yes, exactly. As I was reading through your book, and I have sort of the Kindle copy while I'm going through this, which is why I'm looking at the other screen here. But you go through a number of different business cases around influence, and you talk a lot about different companies and different people that have used influence. One of the people that you talk about a lot is Steve Jobs and how he utilized influence. And I think this is such a great example of someone who's able to utilize influence at scale so effectively and so well. What could we learn from Steve Jobs' use of influence, and how could we be applying that to our sales roles?
I will give credit to Carmine Gallo, who wrote the book, The Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs. When I read that book many years ago, it radically transformed how I present. And I combined that with another book called Presentation Zen, which really helped me understand slide design. And between those two things, when I combined them and I started getting in front of audiences, it was unbelievable the difference. But when it came to Steve Jobs, what was so great was the ability to go over to YouTube and actually watch him. So I'd read something and then I'd go watch. And some of the things that Jobs did that were so good and people might not have been able to put their finger on. First of all, he came across as this super relaxed, cool guy that everybody would want to work for. Now, if you read Walter Isaacson's book on Steve Jobs, I don't think you'll have that impression necessarily, but he practiced. When he knew that, you know, they were going to roll out a new product, he spent umpteen hours practicing. And all of us need to do that. Anytime we're going to be in front of an audience of some sort, never ever think, well, I know it so well, I'm going to wing it. You need to understand things like, what is the core message? You know, and then what are two or three things that I can do to drive that home? I don't need 10 bullet points. It's usually two or three things max that people are going to remember. So how can I incorporate those? And even if he wasn't thinking about the principles of influence as we talk about them, he was utilizing them because he was coming across as likable. One of the things I thought he did that was really amazing, when he would talk about something like when the first iPod came out, he did not stand up there and use technical jargon and say 10 gigabytes of storage. He pulled it out of his pocket and said 1,000 songs in your pocket. And everybody was probably thinking, that's more than my whole CD collection at the time. You could easily translate that even if you weren't a technical person. And the fact that it was so sleek. And then the other thing that he did that I thought was great, he didn't tell you what a great product it was or how amazing it was. He said, isn't that amazing? And that leaves it up to the other person to answer. And when people said yes, and they start doing what I'm doing right now, nodding, then they're naturally going to go buy it. Because once they've determined for themselves, not told, but determined for themselves, that is amazing. Well, then why wouldn't you want it? So I would encourage anybody, pick up Carmine Gallo's The Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs, I took probably 7 or 8 pages of typewritten notes as I went through that book.
I really think that what he did well, and also what Jack Nicklaus did well, who you also talk about in the book, was not only did they present well, I mean, Jobs presented well, but Nicklaus and Jobs also did commitment and consistency very well. You could always rely on them for that consistency portion. Now, right. We don't often talk about this as one of the principles of influence because it's not as sexy as the others, right? But maybe you could dive into commitment and consistency.
When people ask me, you know, which of these principles are most powerful, the standard response is it depends. It really depends on who you're talking to and what you're trying to accomplish, or maybe where you are in the sales cycle. But if I had to step back and say 50,000 foot view for salespeople, I would say that the principle of consistency is the most important when it comes to selling. Because consistency, one big aspect of it is getting other people to commit. And the way that you get people to commit is by asking questions. And all the literature I've read in my time in business basically says this, Mark: good salespeople talk 25, maybe 30% of the time tops. And that's because they understand the value of asking the right questions. Now, many of your listeners are probably thinking, well, that's not what it was like the last time I was with a salesperson. That person wouldn't be quiet. Well, that's not a good salesperson, because it's not a matter of throwing everything at you and hoping that something sticks. The value of asking good questions is, one, it elicits information that's going to maybe allow you to connect on the principle of liking. It might inform your giving. It might allow you to say, hey, other people like you, you know, based on what you just said, Mark. So asking questions informs a tremendous amount, but it also gains commitment, because if I ask the right questions and you say yes, you are more likely to do what I need you to do so I can ultimately help you through this sales process. So it's never about telling you what you have to do. It's not saying, in the insurance industry, I wouldn't say, Mark, I need you to get me your loss runs. I would say, Mark, would you be able to get me your loss runs by Friday? Because without them, I'm not going to be able to go any further on this quote for you. And I know you're looking to get a number as quickly as you can. So I've incorporated a little scarcity there too. You're not going to get what you need unless you're able to help me. But the key is, if you come back and say, yeah, I'm pretty sure I can get them by Friday, you are far more likely to do it than if I would have just told you, because it triggered within you, I gave Brian my word, I better follow through so I don't look bad, but you also want to feel good about yourself.
Love that. One of the things that I want to dive into, and I love that you do this in your book, you talk about deal making and rationality. And one of the struggles that I have with a lot of negotiation training and deal making training in general is there's a presupposition that people that you're going to be working with are going to be rational. How does that strike you, and how do you deal with that?
Well, I recognize that people don't make decisions rationally. I think the evidence is pretty abundant between everything that we've learned through behavioral economics and all of the studies that they show. So you just recognize people aren't going to necessarily make decisions rationally. Don't expect them.
Yes.
When you logically present your information, that they're just going to say, oh, okay, that all makes sense.
Right.
Because they have other things that may be holding them back. For example, somebody may like you a lot and you may have dealt with all of their objections, but then there's that hesitancy to put pen to paper and sign the deal. Why would that be? Well, it could be because last time they made a switch, it wasn't as good as what they thought it was going to be. There was buyer's remorse. There's fear of that happening again. And you need to understand that and help people overcome those things. And you do that by sometimes just bringing to the surface. So maybe we get to the end of the conversation and I say, Mark, if you're like other customers, I know you're feeling a little hesitancy right now. I mean, you may have had something in the past that looked like it was the best thing since sliced bread, and it turned out not to be. And I want to help you overcome that, because it looks like, based on what we've talked about so far, you really like what it is that I've presented so far. So I start addressing that so that we can actually talk about it, rather than hoping that it doesn't surface and wonder why you're not taking that final step. Because it seems logical to me, but I'm not thinking about the position that you're in.
Yeah, I love that approach. One of the ongoing debates that I have with many folks that sort of debate online about negotiation, influence, persuasion, whatever it might be, is that we all make logical decisions and people are very rational, and therefore none of this is required. And my answer to that is, since when has anyone ever made Spock-like logical decision? It's just not going to happen. And right. So you have to understand that, and the science is clear. I mean, if you read any of Daniel Kahneman's work or any of Cialdini's work, the science is clear that people don't make rational, logical decisions. And if that's true, and it is, then you should be learning these principles to help you move them in certain directions.
Absolutely. And salespeople understood this even long before they encountered Cialdini's material. There was a common saying that I heard back in the 80s when I started in insurance, and that is people buy based on emotion and justify after the fact.
Yes.
And they do. Now, but their justification may be so strong that they think they reasoned themselves into the decision. And the reality is most of the time they don't.
Yeah, you're entirely correct. Well, Brian, I've had a wonderful time talking with you. And I think your book is fantastic, by the way. And listeners, if you're listening to this right now, I highly recommend that you go and pick up Brian's book. It's called Influence People, Powerful Everyday Opportunities to Persuade That Are Lasting and Ethical. And it's just fantastic. And the new one, Brian, if you wouldn't mind talking about the new one.
So the new one is called Persuasive Selling for Relationship-Driven Insurance Agents. And let me start with the caveat that if you're not in insurance, don't think, well, then the book's not for me. Because the book goes into a number of things that will benefit any salesperson. I introduce the psychology, talk about an acronym I have for how to become what we call listening stars. I talk about dealing with different personality styles. So those three things right there are going to benefit anybody. And then we look at the sales cycle. And even if you're not in insurance, it's pretty certain that what I lay out in terms of the psychology of prospecting, getting referrals, closing sales, negotiating, that those are still going to apply. It's just that the examples supported by it are insurance related. So those are the main themes in the book. And again, insurance agents are going to get a tremendous amount out of it. But I think people, even if you're not in insurance, you're still going to learn a lot that's going to help you.
I like that you pick up on stages of the sales cycle in the book, and you talk about the principles of influence that are most appropriate at each stage of that sales cycle. I think that's brilliant. What a lot of people struggle with is they try and figure out, okay, where do I use this and where do I use that? And you've created a roadmap for people, which is amazing.
Yeah, I have been associated with Cialdini for almost 20 years, been training on his behalf, meaning utilizing his materials for almost 14 years now. And what I have still found is many people have read the book and they're fascinated by it because it's so interesting, but still struggle to find, how do I put this into action? Or how do I specifically put it into action if I want to do a better job, you know, in my presentation or getting referrals? And so that's really what my specialty is. I understand business and I understand the psychology and marrying the two to help people enjoy more success at the office and happiness at home.
What's the best way for people to reach out to you online?
Well, a couple. My website is influencepeople.biz. And so if they go out there, you know, they can click on the contact me. There's also a tremendous amount of free resources and previews of my LinkedIn courses. So lots of information there, but certainly LinkedIn. So anybody listening to this, if you reach out to me, I'm going to connect with you. And I guarantee that if you don't put in a reason like, hey, I heard you on Mark's podcast, you will get a response from me asking how you found me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on. Thank you for being so gracious with your time. And thanks for sharing your wisdom.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
Hey, friends. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.